Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is a team that was not put together through trades and free agency. This is a team that's two best players were drafted. Trae Young and John Collins. Now, yeah, they went out. They got Gallo. They got Bogey. They brought Lou back, Capella. But yeah, you factor in the top two players on this team. And also Onyeka Okongwu, who could very well be John Collins' successor, who is, you know, I know the stat sheet is not going to jump out at you, but if you look at it, like, just 4 points, two rebounds, like, Onyeka Okongwu at times in this series has looked pretty comfortable for a rookie. I think it's very good that we are seeing the Hawks and even some other teams that are making deep runs in the playoffs that are doing it kind of against the grain. Because for a long time now in the NBA, probably going back to 2008 when Boston said, you know what, Paul Pierce needs help. And I think it was Danny Ainge who went out and got Kevin Garnett. He went out and got Ray Allen. And that was kind of the beginning of the super team. And then we saw what LeBron and Bosh and Wade did. And all these years later, LeBron and Anthony Davis, Paul George and Kawhi, the trio in Brooklyn. But you've got a couple of teams that are doing it, quote, the right way, which I don't really think is the right way. Whatever way results in a championship is the right way. So you got Milwaukee with Giannis and a bunch of other players. You know, I know they brought in Jrue Holiday. They brought in PJ Tucker, but they kind of have an organic feel to them as well. But the thing is, if the last truly organic team to win, if I'm remembering off the top of my head, has to either be the San Antonio Spurs with Duncan and Parker and Ginobili, or the Dallas team with Dirk that beat LeBron in Miami. Even Toronto a few years ago brought in Kawhi Leonard from San Antonio. Now they have Kyle Lowry and Gasol and Siakam, so there was certainly organic development there, but the biggest star was the guy he had to make a move for. So I think there's a lot of ways you can look at that, but the one thing that I think we need to be careful of, because a lot of times, and this goes back to our college football conversation, oh, it's stale, it's stale, it's stale, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored. Okay, that's fine. But what the league wants and what college football wants is ratings and viewers and eyeballs. So we might be tired of LeBron, 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 and maybe the ratings show that we are, but I've noticed in sports, especially in Major League Baseball, I'm tired of the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. Well, when you get this, because everybody says, oh, I love parity, right? And we get to March Madness. I love the upsets in the first round on Thursday, but I don't want the 14 seed going too far. A lot of people want parity. You know what parity results in? Boring. Parity doesn't equate to ratings. So it is good when the stars and the super teams and the villains do kind of create this dynasty or a monopoly on the sport. But maybe we are at the point where this is good. Hey, look at it. We had Utah and Phoenix. We've got Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Philly, Atlanta. We've got the conference finals now, the Clippers and Suns. And we've got two game sevens coming up in the East. I was hoping for Utah and Phoenix in the West, because I wanted it to feel like it was back in the mid-90s again, when it was Barkley and Kevin Johnson and Phoenix up against Stockton and Malone in Utah. It had a 90s feel to it. Now, it's okay. We got the Clippers. But without Kawhi, it's not going to have the same feel. So I thought Barkley was interesting with the organic versus the super team, for sure. The other thing that Barkley brought up was players getting coaches fired. With Dallas, with Rick Carlisle and Luka Doncic. And it's one of these things where two things can be true at once. Like, I get it where Charles is saying, you've got young players who haven't accomplished a damn thing, haven't won anything, getting other dudes fired, which is true. Like, if LeBron gets you fired, I get it. If Durant gets you fired, I get it. But hasn't this always been a players' league? I mean, Michael Jordan ran shop back in 1993, right? It's always been about the select few franchises for four decades in the NBA, and it's always been about a handful of stars. Now, you can argue, well, a Luka Doncic is a star, but he doesn't have enough cachet yet to cost a good coach like Rick Carlisle his job, if that's true. I don't even know if it is. Who knows what's true? I get that. Well, Devin Booker, he can drop 60, but should he really control someone's destiny as their job as an employer? Yeah. All right. Debatable. But this league has always been predicated on the star. Always has been, always will. LeBron, Chris Paul, and a few others dictate this league. From where coaches end up going and staying at to where players ultimately end up going. Which is why now, and this will take us on another little tangent, with Trae Young becoming a bona fide star, Trae's got to start recruiting. I know Trae can't sign people. That's up to Travis. Travis will have to make a decision on John Collins. But if you're an impending free agent and you look at Atlanta and you say, all right, well, will they have the cap space? If I go there with Trae, are we getting to the NBA Finals? Is it possible I can go there and bring another star with me to join Trae? All things that I think moving forward, Trae Young's going to have to do. Trae Young's going to have to start recruiting. And look, all these guys talk to each other in the offseason. They have text message exchanges, phone calls, FaceTimes. A lot of them with the same agent, same shoe contract company. It goes back to our earlier conversation with all these guys are buddy-buddy and we want some nastiness back in sports. But I think Trae Young is going to have to start doing some recruiting. And then the other thing that I thought Barkley was great on, but not 100% accurate on, was when he told LeBron to shut the hell up. You've been out for a month. What are you talking about, guys being injured? Now, look, I'm fatigued by LeBron James. He is, I think, arguably the greatest of all time. I mean, I don't think, and I hate doing the Jordan-LeBron thing, but I think LeBron's a lot closer to Jordan than the LeBron haters can truly see. Well, he's been to the NBA Finals, but he's only won 4, and Kobe's got 5, and Jordan's got 6, and Jordan was 6-0, blah, 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 blah. LeBron James, if he ain't number one, he is on a very short list. Sorry, LeBron haters, but he just is. But Barkley is right on one thing and wrong on the other. Yes, I'm tired of hearing from LeBron James. Go away. You've been out for a while. You got the Space Jam thing release coming up. Just go away. I got LeBron fatigue. But I do think LeBron's got some validity to the statement of, look at these injuries. You know, look at all the guys that dealt with injuries in this condensed season of 72 games. But again, I'll go back to what Charles was saying about the, you know, the shorter season. But the reality is, well, what else were we going to do? We're going to start the season in February? And I have been one of these guys. I know old school sports guy is like, oh, these NBA stars taking off all these games throughout the season. I'm like, yo, Pops, work smarter, not harder. If you can take off 8 days a year extra to be better when it matters most in your line of work, and you had that luxury, would you not take advantage of it? If you're a sales rep and your two biggest stretches of the year are the holidays from Black Friday through Christmas and back to school, and that's where you are truly evaluated on your profession. If your boss gave you off for a week in June, you taking it? If your boss gave you a few random days in February post-holidays, you taking it? You're damn right you are. So I don't crush the MBA guy for taking random nights off with, quote, load management. I think Greg Popovich kind of started that with Kawhi and Tim Duncan and some of the older Spurs. So I'm all for work smarter, not harder. It's not 1944 anymore. I don't care how tough you are. What matters, and we've already said this, we've already made the claim, well, the NBA regular season is largely irrelevant. Let me know when the playoffs start. And let me know when we get to the conference finals. Because only four teams can win this whole thing anyway, right? That's the argument from anti-NBA guy. Okay. True. But also, think about it this way. And here's the other side of the equation. If you do take some of these extra days off, and you aren't maybe truly in prime physical shape, and then when the NBA playoffs start and things get ratcheted up, people play defense, energy levels are off the chart, well, you do run the risk of getting hurt, right? Because you haven't been going at that level of intensity. You haven't built it up. So it kind of works both ways. But I do agree with Charles. LeBron, you've been out for like a month. Just go away. But the organic thing that he said with organic versus super teams is going to be fascinating because the reality is, and I mentioned this in the beginning of the first hour, no matter how good Trae Young ends up becoming, and he could end up becoming great, he's going to need more. History has shown us that a guy of Trae Young's ability is just not enough. Even if you go to Golden State pre-Durant, Steph Curry needed Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. One of the lone exceptions may be Toronto from 3 years ago with Kawhi Leonard. Could be the rare exception with just one truly great player in recent memory. A bunch of other, you know, close to all-star or all-star caliber players, Lowry, Gasol, Van Fleet, Siakam, nice team. But Kawhi, arguably the best two-way player on the planet when he's healthy. As great as Trae is, he's not going to earn that title, best two-way player on the planet. And if you go back, and if you just scroll through the annals of NBA history, maybe the last team to win it without even one star, the 04 Pistons, but that team had basically five all-stars. They didn't have a true number one star, like one of the five best players on the planet, but they had Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, and the Wallaces. I mean, that's like saying, well, I don't have an ace, but I've got three kings and two queens. I got a full house. I'm going to win a lot of hands in poker with that, right? So we will see about that. All right, enough of the Hawks for today. We got the Braves coming up in about 30 minutes, but right now, quick break. We'll come back. Stan Autry, longtime golf writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, will join us to talk U.S. Open. Stan's been around a long time. Does he like the Koepka-DeChambeau rivalry? We'll get into it next. Stay there. All right, rolling on here on a Saturday as we hang out till 6 o'clock. We'll get to the Braves coming up in about 20 minutes to wrap up today's festivities. But right now, let's go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and let's talk a little U.S. Open because the leaderboard's getting very, very juicy. And joining us right now is Stan Autry, longtime golf writer for the AJC. Stan, good to have you back on the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are things on your end?
Everything is good on my end because I'm sitting here looking at a leaderboard on the first page of Matthew Wolf, John Rahm, Louis Oosthuizen, and Rory, Bryson, Brooks, and Bubba. If that holds up for tomorrow, my Father's Day is set. I'm curious from your vantage point. You've been covering this sport a long time. outside of Phil Mickelson over the last month, the biggest storyline has been the feud and rivalry between Brooks and Bryson. You've covered the sport for a long time. Is it good for the game of golf?
I think it makes it interesting, and I don't think it's really that big of a feud. It's certainly, you know, doesn't rival some of the other ones in sports. Like, for example, NASCAR, you got guys hitting each other in the pit on pit row. That's kind of fun. And golf is such a gentlemanly state sport. When something like this does happen, it kind of makes you giggle a little bit.
You know, when you look at these two players, it feels like there's, you know, I don't know that there's a true jealousy, but, you know, Brooks has four majors. Bryson got one last year at Winged Foot. And we all know that the discussion points around, you know, Bryson and putting on all the weight and the distance. It felt like to me, and I'm a Brooks fan, that Brooks felt a little threatened by the fact that Bryson was trying to be the big bully on the block. Is that a fair assessment? Am I reading too much into it?
No, I don't think so. And I think Brooks always has a little chip on his shoulder. Because it seems like he's never really gotten the respect in his mind that he's due. There's always been somebody else there to kind of steal it, whether it's Jordan Spieth or Colin Morikawa or somebody. It's just somebody a little more sexier out there than him, even though his accomplishments, you know, are unequaled. And I think he sees maybe DeChambeau is a little flashy. He's a science guy. He's got that little beret he wears. And I don't think he feels threatened. He just, you know, he doesn't feel like he's getting what he should be getting.
Yeah, and I feel like it's because Koepka's not necessarily a great soundbite. But I also wonder, too, which would kind of contradict my next thought. You know, with Brooks, he's got four majors, and that's all we ever care about in golf, right? Oh, how many majors did you win? Well, he's got a bunch of majors, but he's only won seven or eight other events. Is it the fact that maybe he doesn't take the other events that are non-majors as seriously that leads to maybe the lack of coverage that he feels like he's due?
Well, I think part of that is just there are more colorful guys out there, and that's just not his personality to put himself out there. And if that leads to the little chip on his shoulder, so be it. If that makes him play better, if that gives him extra motivation, you know, so be it. Good for him. But whatever it is, it works. And I guarantee you, at the end of his career, if he comes up and he's got eight majors and 12 PGA Tour victories, he ain't going to care. Because those eight majors are so much more important.
Yeah,
he's certainly
true.
Not like a Lee Jansen who's won twice and they just both happen to be U.S. Opens,
right.
Or Andy North the same way. So I just think it's been kind of fun. It's certainly not we remember, you remember Phil and Tiger. They didn't like each other, right? Now they're best buddies. So now they're old guys, you know, with their backs hurt and they take medicine and stuff. So I think they'll get past this and they'll play on President's Cups and Ryder Cup teams and, it'll be okay. But let's just kind of enjoy the color while we can.
Absolutely. Stan Autry, longtime golf writer, AJC, is joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So if you look at the top of the leaderboard, we'll get to the names that carry more weight in a moment. But atop the leaderboard, Russell Henley and Richard Bland at 5-under par. Probably the casual guy either doesn't know who they are or doesn't want either one of them to win. Do you think either one of them have a chance to hold up to the pressure over the course of the weekend?
You know, I would say no, but you can look back and there's some screwy things that happened at the U.S. Open. I mean, how else can you explain Michael Campbell winning the U.S. Open? And like we talked about, Lee Jansen's won it twice. Andy North's won it twice. Stuff happens, it seems like, at the U.S. Open that doesn't make sense. And Richard Bland is a great story. I mean, he's a guy from England who it took him almost 500 starts to win his first tournament on the European Tour. And he's a guy everybody can pull for, but maybe not necessarily this week. And, of course, Henley is a kid he grew up in Macon, Georgia. He's won the U.S. Won the Georgia Amateur a couple of times. Just a great player, a great ball striker, and he's kind of disappeared for a few years, kind of gone into limbo. So it's nice to see him emerge. I wouldn't think either one of those guys are going to win, but, you know, we'll see. Stranger things have happened.
one of the guys that I think a lot of people were hoping could win and maybe believed it's a reality based on what we saw at Kiowa a month ago is Phil Mickelson. Wins a major at 50. We know he's never won the U.S. Open. Runner-up six times. Still trying to get that Grand Slam. Father's Day, it's his birthday week. Does it feel like maybe Phil is still a little drained from winning a month ago, winning the PGA?
Well, I think that was, a lot of that may have been lightning in the old bottle. The fact that people think that he could come in at age 50 and win, even though he loves this place, he loves Torrey Pines and he knows it, and he's well prepared. I think that's a big ask to think Phil's going to come in here and win. Now, and on the other hand, you know, John Rahm, I think that's the guy that I like right now. I mean, he's played so well, and what happened to him a week and a half ago, getting DQ'd or had to withdraw at the end of the third round when he had a six-shot lead. I think that's the guy who's in a position to win his first major this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, he's playing well. He's sitting there at 3 under, just 2 off of the lead in fourth place. But I didn't know, like, what his mindset would be this weekend, because he should have won 2 weeks ago. You alluded to the COVID test that came out to wrap up the third round on a Saturday. So I didn't know where he would be mentally, but he's won at Torrey Pines before. So does that factor in? I know when they play at Torrey in January or early February, it's a different course compared to what a U.S. Open setup will be. But does it feel like if you have success at the Farmers earlier in the year, you could win at the U.S. Open in June?
I think there may be some carryover, and he's played a lot there. And you're right, it is one of the coldest weeks of my life was spent at Torrey Pines at that tournament a few years ago. It was miserable, you know. I was packed for San Diego. I wasn't packed for Nome, Alaska, which is what that week turned into. But Rahm is like one of Mickelson's boys. So I think if Phil can't win it, I think he would love to see John Rahm win this thing. And, John just became a dad not long ago. And he said this week that he understood what happened to him, and that was not the most disappointing thing. The most disappointing thing was not being able to be there when his parents came over and met his child for the first time. That was more disappointing to him than losing a golf tournament like that. So I think his head's in the right place, and I think he's if he's on the leaderboard, if he's close, I think he's the guy I like.
You know, you bring up, you like where his head was at. One of the big stories this week, speaking of where you're at mentally, is Matthew Wolf, one of the young guns of the game. He comes out with Morikawa and Hovland 2 years ago, gets a win, and then took a little break for the last couple of months and publicly came out and said he was dealing with mental health issues. And here he is now, one shot off of the lead at 4 under par. I think if you're a writer or if you're just a good human, you kind of love this story that's developing, right?
Yeah, one of my friends wrote about him this week, and I didn't realize he had the problem like he did. You take 2 months off, and most of the time you think that's a physical thing. You're trying to get ready and trying to overcome something physical. But he had to step away, and 2 months is a long time to be away from competitive golf. But it looks like it has rejuvenated him, and he looks like he's in a good place. And, you know, he's got that odd swing, but he makes it work. And people expect big things out of him. And he's, like you mentioned, the other two guys in that class that came out, he was the first one of them to win. And it looks like he has benefited from being away.
Stan Autry joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Nick Cale Show, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. 2 months away is a long time in the world of golf. 7 years removed from a major, 10 years from your last U.S. Open, also a long time. But yet, here's Rory McIlroy. He's 3 under through 12. He's 2 shots off of the lead, and he's got a birdie putt coming up. Are you surprised, as gifted as Rory McIlroy is, and I know he got back in the winner's circle earlier this year, are you surprised the major drought that he's been on 7 years removed from Valhalla?
It does seem quite unlikely, his absence of major championships since then, because it seemed like he was on kind of a tiger path where he was going to win a whole bunch of them, and he just hasn't. I think he got sidetracked this year earlier trying to chase distance and trying to keep up with Bryson DeChambeau, and he kind of realized that was a fool's quest right there. And he's kind of got back to where he needs to be. I don't think you ever count that guy out. He's got so much game. And when he gets the putter going, you know, that which could be the whole difference this weekend, who puts the best on the weekend.
You know, it's funny. We talked about Brooks Koepka and how he just rises to the occasion for majors. Now, the next guy I'm going to bring up only has one, but it seems like the higher the stakes are, he's always lurking somewhere in the top three or top five, and that's Louis Oosthuizen. What is it about this guy? I mean, I believe the only win he has on the tour was the Open Championship 11 years ago. What is it about this guy where he's always so close, but he just doesn't seem to be able to close the deal?
That's a good question. He probably would like to know the answer to that, too, because you're absolutely right. It seems like he's in contention a lot of times in major championships, and for whatever reason, somebody else plays just a little bit better on Sunday. You know, he has one bad hole in the final round. It's just something keeping him out. But it's like these guys said, like Phil used to say, if you just keep putting yourself in a position, eventually, you know, you're going to win. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see Louis win this weekend. I mean, he's got a great game.
Yeah, he really does. Yeah, and another guy with a great game. And final one for you here. We're talking to Stan Autry. So, you know, we know Bubba's got two majors. He's won the Masters. But Bubba's career has always felt like he wins at a handful of courses that fit his game. And then other courses, he's got no shot. Are you surprised that Bubba's doing what he's doing right now at Torrey, considering doesn't seem to be like his type of track?
Yeah, you hit that nail on the head. In fact, I had him written down on this to bring him up to you, because that's the one guy I did not expect to see, because I never think of Bubba having a U.S. Open type of game. I mean, I think of him as like, hit it wherever you want to, and as long as it's wide open, he'll have a play. But you can't do that at the U.S. Open. You've got to be more precise. And to be honest, I've not even seen him hit a shot this week. So I guess he's been keeping in play. He is so inventive, and he's such a great inventive player. He plays with such great feel. It would be nice to see him pull something like this off and show people he can win somewhere besides Augusta National, you know, which he's already got a track record there. But winning a U.S. Open would certainly put him in Hall of Fame conversation at that point, three major championships.
Stan, we got about 30 seconds left. You got a prediction? Who do you think is going to get this done tomorrow night?
I think it's going to be John Rahm at the end of the day. I think it's going to be a big finish. I think it'll be a good race. But I think Rahm, if I had to put money on it, Rahm would be my guy.
All right, let's see if he gets it done, and let's see if they can get it in and finished just in time for the tip-off of Game 7, Hawks and Sixers. Great stuff, Stan.
You
thank
go.
You.
Enjoyed it, Nick. Have a
you
good
got
afternoon.
It. Stan Autry, longtime golf writer for the AJC, joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Rahm would be a good story. He basically had that tournament a couple of weeks ago, won. He had a five-shot lead. He was like 17, 18 under par after a Saturday. And then a couple of guys had to come out and say, oh, Mr. Rahm, you tested positive for COVID. And he had to be DQ'd. And he was going to win. But could be a heck of a redemption story a few weeks later. All right, I don't know if the Braves will be a redemption story, but I got a couple of takes. We'll get to the Bravos coming up next as we wrap it up here on a Saturday, the Nick Kale Show. Here on a Saturday as we hang out till 6 o'clock. Good stuff today. We appreciate Bob Rathbun from the Hawks coming on the show, courtesy of Bally Sports. Also, Stan Autry. Good stuff out of him last segment. Former longtime golf writer for the AJC on the U.S. Open. And I'm just telling you right now, if you're a golf fan and you've been captivated by the back and forth with Koepka and DeChambeau, just pray that the golf gods give us a final pairing of them tomorrow. Because right now they are both at 2 under par. So, in theory, there's a chance they could be paired together, which might break the internet. But let's get to the Braves before we get out of here. Cardinals-Braves rained out today, a day-night doubleheader. scheduled for tomorrow, postponed because of rain. We'll have the typical day-night doubleheader on a weekend tomorrow, Sunday at 2:10 p.m., and then the second game at 7:08. And under pandemic rules, both games will be scheduled for seven innings because, you know, somebody might get COVID if they play an extra inning. Yeah, you don't want that to happen. Here's the thing with the Braves, and I'm trying not to say they're out of it. I'm like, you ever, like, you get to the point where you want to make a statement or you want to tell somebody something or you want to do a, you know, complete some sort of task or an action, and you're just waiting for that last domino to fall. Like, that's where I feel like I'm at with the Braves right now, because they're 5.5 games back. And we are now, if I do some quick math on the fly, 67 games in. So we've got 15 more games to the halfway point. We are only about 2 weeks away from the 4th of July. All-star break, probably about 3 weeks, right? Here's the number that keeps popping out in my head. As I was thinking about this for the show today and where I'm at with the Braves, 5.5 back. If they fall to seven games back, either by the 4th of July in 2 weeks or the All-Star break in 3 weeks, that's where I think I say they're done. I'm going to wait and pretend that I've done radio for long enough and watched sports long enough not to put the nail in the coffin too soon on a good team in a sport like baseball. But I'm close. Now, they've won two in a row. We'll see if they can sweep the Cardinals. But I'm looking at this thing right now, and I ask you, what do you expect that will change that will lead to a drastic turnaround? Like, what can the Braves do to kind of flip the script like the Hawks did? The Hawks looked like they were dead. They got rid of Lloyd Pierce. Nate got elevated to interim coach, and they turned into world beaters. I'm not saying Brian Snicker should be fired and you're going to bring in a new skipper or elevate a bench coach and all of a sudden the Braves are going to look like it's 1995 again. I'm not saying that. But what's going to change so significantly that this team goes from three games under 500 to get to a point where they can be in wild card contention or even division contention? Because right now, they would need to play at a very, very high rate of baseball just to get to 88 wins. So you're talking 162, 88, 70, 88 and 72 is 162, right? Or is my math off? But even then, to be 16 games over 500 when you're three below right now, I mean, you're going to have to be almost 20 games above 500 the rest of the way coming in the second half of the season with a depleted rotation, guys on the back end that you can't trust, Freddie Freeman having a rough year, Marcell Ozuna nowhere to be found for other issues. It just feels like this is kind of the perfect bad storm of a lot of different ingredients that just leads to the conclusion of, this is not our year. And I'm not saying the window's closed. I'm not saying blow it up. But it just feels like 2021 might not be what the Braves were hoping for and what we were all looking for. And I don't know if it goes back to last year. Maybe there's a NLCS championship hangover from being up 3-1 to losing three in a row. You know, Freddie Freeman, the pressure of a contract. But it just feels like this team is just kind of stuck in mud. Win a few, lose a few. Can't get above 500. Can get to 500, but can't eclipse it. It just seems like they've been almost stuck in neutral or a gear below neutral all year. It's like when you're going out there and you're a relatively routine golfer as an amateur, and you're just, you know, you play, let's just say you play every weekend, and you're like an 18 handicap, and you shoot around 90, and you're just having one of those rounds where it's just bogey after bogey after bogey, you can't really flip the switch and get into a groove or get some momentum, but you're not playing like to the point where you just want to throw your clubs into the pond and get into the car and go home. That's kind of where I'm at with the Braves right now. So we'll see with this team. And again, I don't know what it is. Maybe Alex Anthopoulos does something before the trade deadline that drastically alters this team from an energy standpoint or an execution standpoint. But right now, I have no reason to believe they're going to be anything more than a few games over 500 at best. You look at the schedule coming up. Once they wrap up with the Cardinals, they get four against the Mets at Citi Field from Monday through Wednesday. They're going to have to make some ground up there because they are now six games back of the New York Mets. The Mets, the only team in this division right now with a winning record. Phillies a game below, Braves three below, Nationals five below. It's been a very underwhelming NL East. When going into the season, I think there's a lot of expectations from baseball people around the country that, hey, the Mets are going to be good. The Phillies will be competitive. The Braves are the class of the division. And the Nationals can be, you know, somewhat of a pain in the butt, and they'll be a little bit above 500. But right now, you look around this sport, and you got to go out west to find some of the best teams in the National League. And then in the American League, you know, the White Sox expected to be there. The A's have been a world beater. And Tampa Bay is once again reminding us that Boston and New York can spend all they want. We just run our franchise at a lower budget, but just at an extraordinarily efficient rate. So you look at this Braves team. I'd like to think there's a run in them. I just don't know what it is. 404-741-0929. All right. Got the Braves out of my system. Look, we'll do more Braves as soon as this Hawks playoff run is over. That's for sure. But big stuff tomorrow. Hawks, Sixers, Game 7 in Philly. Tip off shortly after 8 o'clock. You'll hear that right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pre-game with Conti and Holman gets started at 7:30. I'll have you with pre-game from 5 to 7:30. And then as soon as the game goes final, join us on Facebook Live, myself and Chris Goforth, on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page. But it's setting up tomorrow, Father's Day, Game 7. Hawks Sixers, doubleheader, Braves Cardinals, final round, U.S. Open. If your kids love you, if your wife loves you, if your girlfriend loves you, if your significant other loves you, and if you want to watch all those sports I just mentioned, they will do what you ask. Honey, just give me today. No grocery store, no garbage, no cutting the grass. No toasting the daughter's bagel at 8:30. Honey, I'm in game mode. These next 12 hours of the utmost importance. And if you're a good guy, it might just be granted to you. All right, final thought. Let me see here. U.S. Open before we get out of here. McIlroy, he's at 3 under. Wolf and Oosthuizen at 4. DeChambeau at 2. Rahm at 2. Koepka at 1. And Bubba Watson at 1. So it's looking like we will have Sunday drama. Now all we need is guys like Russell Henley and Richard Bland to fall off the map. I mean, I never heard of Richard Bland, 48 years old from England. His name is Dick Bland. Never heard of the guy. Not rooting for him either. Hopefully he puts up a quadruple bogey and just gets off my television. But those are my problems, not yours. All right, good stuff today. Our thanks to Stan Autry. Our thanks to Bob Rathbun. Eric Slaughter doing a great job producing all the calls, the tweets, the text board. Good stuff, everybody. We will talk to you tomorrow. Braves doubleheader, Hawks game 7, final round at the U.S. Open. I'll see y'all tomorrow, 5 o'clock, with a little Hawks pre-game here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. See ya.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.